so this
after the merger, mm-hmm. and after the merger, we had the most extraordinary spurt of organizing. I mean, it was not unusual to go into a DPS. We were also in DPSS. It wasn't unusual for myself to get start to put on other organizers as well. After the merger, we could afford to do that, to go down to a DPSS building and take it, go through the building floor by floor, and we come out with 100 new members in a day.
Because I noticed there was in one of the newspapers from 53, right around the time of the merger, in 2 months, you added 800 new members.
Yes, yes.
So it was obviously an incredible boost.
It was an incredible boost. People signed the card saying, but we've been a member of the union all the time. They may have. I mean, we could count them as members, but they paid their dues maybe 3 times a year. I mean, 3 months' dues in toto. So it was, we not only got our old members back, but we organized a whole group of new members. And that spurt continued until the late 70s.
Now, your role and your relationship to the power structure in the union remained the same after the merger.
Well, let me go back a little bit. In the UPW, I was not the general manager. I was a business agent and then became a senior business agent. We had two senior business agents, myself, a white female in the county, and a black male in the city. And we worked in tandem, Sidney Moore and myself. And we had a general manager, Sam Berline, who left before 50, I believe. And so we ran it as two senior business agents.
Oh, without any manager.
And without any manager. The UP, building service had a manager. 347 had a manager, Ed Bradford. So he remained the general manager with our consent, and we were the senior business agents.
So your roles remained the same. And
well, let me put it this way. Theoretically, yes, Sid Moore organized the city workers, and I organized the county workers. And the business agents, or the organizers that were hired subsequently, were either in the city under Sid or in the county under myself. Very shortly after we merged, we had the merge in 53. I got married in 53, right? The merger was 1 month, and I got married the next month. And I became pregnant about a month after I got married. And I worked until my seventh or eighth month, and then they voted to get rid of the general manager, and Al Charlton became the general manager. Now, I don't remember what his position was earlier, but he was with the Board of Education Workers, that's what happened, and in Local 99, and then he came over as the general manager. He was from the Building Service Union. And I was at home, and he was suggested to the Board of Trustees to hire as desirable, that he had the experience of running the union, not just being the president and so forth. And so the executive board elected him to be selected him.
At that point, if you had not been on pregnancy leave or maternity leave, you would have probably become the general manager at that point.
I don't know whether I would have. I don't know. I think that they wanted a male. Mm. I don't think so. I think they wanted a male, and he was a male who was in an adjourning union, you know, the Board of Education, and they shared an office with us, so we knew him, and it was agreeable to everybody that he become that person. And he was recommended by George Hardy very strongly, and everybody agreed. There was no disagreement about it. The old faction of the old group from the Building Service Union and our group, the public workers personnel, they were all in agreement that he should go, and secondly, that this man should replace him.
So the initial unity between the two groups was maintained
until 1962.
Oh, okay. When we get there. Now, let me ask a couple of questions about the how. Well, first of all, you have been basically affiliated with the CIO, both mm-hmm. in terms of political ideology and reality up until the point of the merger. At
right.
the point of the merger, then all ties with the CIO are broken. What was your feeling about that, and was there sort of any kind of informal relationship maintained with the CIO Central Council?
We had moved away from the CIO building in the interim between, I can't give you the time, but it was between 50 and 53, so that when when we were meeting with the with George Hardy and the building service in 53, we had been living on West 7th Street. So the break with the CIO had come earlier than that. We were excommunicated in 50, and I think maybe we could have moved in 51 or something like that. Did we see them? Were we close? Certainly. Did I know people in the AFL? Not really. I knew about the building trades, but I had never met them.
So how did that feel to you politically, that kind of shift?
Well, it was a strange experience to me, and quite different from what I imagined it would be, because I really thought that the building trades and the AFL did not represent their membership. I thought they were very conservative. My view of them was that they didn't work hard, that they were piecards who received their pay and then went home at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and that we in the CIO were the only ones that were working hard and organizing and representing our membership. Well, I found out that that was a very infantile concept of the rest of the labor movement. It was true that that existed among some people. But it also existed, I'm sure, in the CIO. I didn't know them. I mean, my experience in the CIO was that I had never met such a group of dedicated organizers, and it was a period of growth and struggle. Now, some of the building trades people were very patronizing to my local. They criticized us. They told the county authorities, oh, they're just a noisy bunch, don't pay too much attention to them, and they're a bunch of lefties, and don't take them too seriously. And they really disapproved of the fact that we could, if we were fighting for something, we'd bring down 800 or 500 people down to the Board of Supervisors and make a pitch for whatever it was we wanted. Not that we got everything we wanted, but at least we protested, we submitted our complaints, our grievances, and we were sustained in many cases where nobody believed we had a chance to be heard or that they would do anything about it. So the standing that we had with the building trades was not very good both ways. They didn't admire our methods, and we certainly didn't have any respect for what they were doing. So it was not being in the AFL was not a thrilling prospect, but I learned. Mm-hmm. I learned and met dedicated organizers who were there at night and they're coming in on Saturday just like we did. I learned to respect their autonomy and their locals and their loyalty to their unions. I organize, I and my staff, but when I was alone, I'm speaking for myself, I organized building tradesmen in my union once we were in building service.
Oh, so you no longer focused on just the...
Oh, no. I focused on the hospital workers. But I used to get a call when I went up to Olive View, for instance, and spoke with the attendants and the other groups, and the building tradesmen used to see me sitting in the cafeteria, and I'd say hello and always give them a leaflet, and they knew what we were doing. And they had such regard for our union that they asked me to come over and talk to the building tradesmen where they met. They had a special building. They had lockers with naked women peering at me from their lockers. And, they had terrible-looking posters there that were really quite insulting, but I decided the first thing to do is organize them and then I'd educate them. They wanted to organize. And the president of our union was head of the building trades group. At the general hospital, I remember the building trades people offices are down below in the basement. That's where the custodial and that's where the kitchen workers went. I think I told you last time how I organized with the men with the blanket and the sheet over a wire, and they're on the one side changing, and I'm on the other side or pitching the union. Well, the building, the carpenters and the painters always came first. Mm. I don't know why, but painters were responsive. So we had quite a few building tradesmen in our union, and they loved their union. They were loyal to the union, but they joined our union as well because we did everyday representation. We took up grievances, and it was their way of support. They never saw a business agent except at contract time, and to them that was, they hadn't complained about it until then, and until they saw us there every day. So you could get somebody there from our union at any time, and we were there at different hours, different shifts. So we had quite a few building tradesmen, and we had operating engineers, and so the unions started to have a terrific respect for us because they saw us not only having a picket line in front of the hospital because of the mistreatment of a patient or a worker, but they saw us in there trying to build the hospital, fight for the patients, fight for the working conditions for all of them, not only for our members. And they joined the union. And we never told them to drop their own union membership. So we began to have a very good relationship with the AFL locals. And I gained a new respect for the way they were operating, some of their things, you know, that were really good. So that in 1953, we merged. And about not even a year after we merged, well, let me put it this way. I can get the date. I have the newspaper here. A newspaper item appeared in the AFL's monthly paper, The Citizen, which was which Bill Bassett was the head of it. And the picture showed myself and my new husband. And the heading was, you know, and I showed it to you, a pretty business agent gets married and so forth. And they had this very lovely picture that we took. We went, both of us went to a dinner that the advertising local had. Hack was a member of that. He was in public relations. And following the publication of that picture, George Hardy, who was the international vice president and in charge of the West Coast, came down here and he told me that he was called by the County of Los Angeles, and there was a representative from the Chief Administrative Officer, the CAO, and Bill Bassett and some other people to urge him to disaffiliate our local because we had been thrown out by the CAO and we were too left and too radical, and the Central Labor Council and the county didn't want any of this, and maybe the county would withdraw recognition, and it would be very serious. So George Hardy said, I mean, are you clean? Do I have anything to worry about? I said, of course, we're clean. He said, are you doing anything if it became known, would be hurt the union? I said, no. He said, okay, I believe you. He says, those bastards have no business to do it, and they're against, it's against everything that unions stand for. And he said, you know, but they may get to the national head of the building service union, who is very nervous about these things. And he may give me instructions to disaffiliate your local. But he says, if that happens, he said, well, you know, what do you think about that? I said, look, if you have to do that in order to maintain this joint local with it, beginning to flourish, and it means just getting rid of, not the local, but getting rid of me and Sid Moore, I said, I haven't spoken to Sid, but I'm sure you're going to hear the same answer from him. We'll go, because this local is home. It's in the right place, and it's just going to be marvelous, and I have confidence that you'll have somebody good in charge of them, and we'll go, and you're not going to have a fight on this question. But I said, I don't think you have to do that. He said, why? What do you mean? And I said, I think you ought to take the next plane home and just not give them an answer and see what happens. But he said, if it does happen, he said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. He said, I'm going to give you all of our members that originally affiliated with you, all of our public members of public worker unions, and I'll try to find a good international for you that where you can do what you all are so good at doing, where you can organize, where you'll be respected, where you won't go through this kind of hounding. And if we can't, he said, I'll help you set you up as a, I'll help you be an independent union. But he said, really, what we should do is find another international for you. But he said, and then I said, you know what I think we should do? I think that if you went back up to San Francisco and didn't answer them, what can they do? He went back up to San Francisco that day, because he had traveled down here. He was in charge of both of the area. He had such a... If you're ever in a leaky boat, you want George Hardy in that boat with you. I mean, he is a loyalist to his toes. And also, he admired the militancy. Because he's that kind of an organizer. He's tough and rough and magnificent. And he went back to San Francisco, and we never heard another word, and the whole thing dropped. Since that time, our local has had a very wonderful, growing, supportive experience, and the Central Labor Council was our most avid supporters. And when Bill Bassett left, and we got Sig Erowitz came in after the merger of the FFL, the CO merger, why, it was a different kind of a labor movement here, because he brought militancy and understanding of the social scene and a desire to make changes, and was not in the same caliber as Bill Bassett.
Well, because later I want to talk about the problems in 62 when you said there was not as much unity. But before the merger in 53, you had, what units had you already organized? We talked last time about the laundry workers.
Well, we didn't have any bargaining units, so anybody that walked was fair game.
Yeah, work areas.
Yeah, but the primary ones were in the health institutions, laboratory workers, attendants, institutional helpers, licensed vocational nurses, aides, technicians, all the x-ray technician, respiratory technician, pulmonary function technician, laundry workers, kitchen workers, pharmacy helpers, pharmacists, which was a very interesting part, social workers, medical, psychiatric, clerks in the DPSS, social workers in the DPSS, laundry workers,
and
custodians.
And this was just you?
Just me.
Now, we talked about how you organized the laundry workers. Did you remember Major West's sister's name?
Yes, Leona Crane.
Okay. Oh, all right. I was going to ask you because...
It came 2 minutes after you left.
Okay. Because there's a picture of her when there's no, it wasn't a reclassification. There was a picture...
When they wanted to give the laundry workers to for the prisons to do and shut down the laundries?
No, this was a... she was a
shop steward.
It's 52 to 53. It looked to me like it was probably 52 to 53. It was before the merger in any event.
Mm-hmm.
Where increases were won for the black laundry workers.
Yes.
And the stewards, they mentioned a Thelma Scruggs.
Yes, yes.
And a Leona Crane.
Right.
Shop steward.
Right. Well, Leona Crane was a spiritual head of that laundry. Thelma had been an association person, but I think she was won over on the black issues, not on the union issue. Leona Crane had to satisfy herself that we were not proper, but that we had a spiritual sense of good and evil. She was a very religious person, and that... we were not there to exploit the laundry workers, but that we were really sincere. And she was quiet, did not join when other people did. And her brother, who was the leader of the laundry, said, if you get Leona to join, she will lead this laundry into victory. And that's exactly what happened, because everybody had such faith in her.
Specific thing that finally convinced her to give us off?
There was this terrible discrimination in the laundry that the contempt of the white, ignorant leadership in the laundry had for the black laundry workers, because there were no four ladies that were black. When you came in, all the blacks remained at the entry-level jobs except the men who went up to washermen. They were treated with contempt. And she felt that it was a civil rights struggle. And when she saw the union taking these questions up as a civil rights issue, not strictly a union issue, she became convinced this was her other church, her other organization. And there was a love affair between her and Local 434 and me. Mm-hmm. I admired and loved her as a sister. I helped her try to help her change her dietary habits, because she later suffered a heart attack and she used to have ice cream for lunch because she was deprived as a child. She was so poor she never had enough to eat. She was a wonderful, she was like a guidepost to me. When I had a decision to make in the union office, many times I said to myself, what would Leona think of this? Things outside the laundry. She was my conscience until the day she died. She was a wonderful, wonderful woman.
Did she stay in the laundry the entire time?
She stayed in the laundry in her same job. And the thing I remember about her was, the final insult was that one of the black laundry women took the exam for forelady. It wasn't called forelady, but that's what they called them in the laundry. And she got the highest mark. And this was about the second time or third time that she got it, and she wasn't appointed. Are you changing? And we took it up as a civil rights issue with the head of the hospital, and I threatened to take it to the Board of Supervisors as a case of discrimination and nothing else but discrimination. Went to Supervisor Hahn about the matter, and we won the battle. And she came with me to see the head of the hospital. This is this famous Leroy Bruce, who said that the only union was good union was the Teamsters. He hated the CIO.
Dave Beck was
his hero. Right. And he was contemptuous. And I brought her along with her brother to represent the laundry. And when we made these charges about the corruption in the laundry, the bookies and the running errands and bringing a ham to get a good mark, the fact that we not only charged individual discrimination and improper and immoral conduct, but the fact that we made it a case of race discrimination infuriated him. And she hadn't opened her mouth. She's a very quiet woman. And she stood up. She didn't talk sitting down. She stood up and she gave him the story about the mule. You don't have to bang the attention of the mule and the whole bit. And she let him have it and described living in a plantation with the overseer. And she told him in all certain words that's the way he was acting. She shamed him. She absolutely shamed him into silence. And from that moment on, she really built that union. Mm-hmm. And it became the cherished unit in the whole union, although it was the smallest unit.
How large was it?
Well, we had, I think maybe there were 150 or 100 workers there. Later on, when they got rid of this corrupt crew, and I brought Supervisor Hahn into the laundry and showed it to him, and he backed us 1,000% at the board, and we got a rebuilt building added to it where they could have clean, attractive place to eat their lunch. They couldn't afford to go out to eat lunch.
So that all came after, that came later then, because the issue of the corruption within the laundry was really the first issue.
The first issue was the favoritism, race discrimination, and corruption.
Okay. And then the issue of the actual conditions where Hahn came in and saw what it was like, that was later, a little bit later.
It was all during that time. I would say that that gave us the impetus to organize the whole hospital, because everybody felt that way about the laundry who went in there. Mm. Well, you went in there and saw the conditions under which those men and women, it looked like a plantation. It was the filthiest, nastiest place where men were standing in water unnecessarily. They had to drain the water, where contaminated material came in, and we got them hazard pay for that, and had to fight for it at the Board of Supervisors. We called in inspection union units to clean up the mess, and then finally organized the seamstresses upstairs, the sewing operators who felt that they were the elite because they didn't have to deal with all the filth that went on. You know, I mean, some of the stuff that was brought in from the patients were lice-ridden. It was the most disgusting place. And these wonderful, hard-working, poorly educated women and men were working there, and you think you were in a... If you saw a film about what a southern prison plantation was like, that was what it was like.
So they were really the crux in terms of the hospital organizing?
Not in numbers.
But in terms of... In terms of spirit and
meaning of a union, the caring of one member for the other. An injury to one was an injury to all, was the shibboleth. That was our motto, was on a lot of our leaflets and so forth.